Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You've often heard the Arabs cry that they have their Nakba Day. They have it once a year, their Nakba. Nakba for them is their national tragedy. And their national tragedy, they claim, is the modern state of Israel. The people, the nation who has given them everything. Do you know that the Arabs never had a university before the Jews came here? They never had a university here in the land of Israel or in their so-called Palestine. And their morbidity rate was so high, and we helped their babies survive. We helped them survive. In fact, there are still people today, even political leaders in the Palestinian Authority in Gaza, who come to Israel today to be treated. But this is their political Nakba. But the Jewish people have a real Nakba, a real national tragedy that we also observe every year. And that is called Tisha B'Av, the ninth day of the month, of the Hebrew month of Av. And that is when the Holy Temple in Jerusalem was destroyed. And many terrible things happened on this day to the Jewish people. You had the start of the Inquisition, where, in fact, Christopher Columbus left on the day of Tisha B'Av. It was the last day Jews could remain in Spain and not have to either convert or die at the stake. You either left or you converted. Many Jews left on that day. It was a terrible day. They say that World War I, World War II was established from things that happened on Tisha B'Av, terrible things. And throughout history, terrible things have happened on the day of Tisha B'Av, and we are going to be observing that this week as well. So what is the holiday all about? What are the customs? Why are we still observing it? We're going to be speaking with a rabbi today, and you can too. Feel free to call in. Our numbers are on our homepage at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. We'll be right back.
G'day, I'm John O'Vandor.
And I'm Ross Nichols.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind, a show that broadcasts all the weekly goodness that flows like milk and honey from the Holy Land straight into your ears with humorous and happy news stories.
New shows are posted every Thursday at 7 p.m. Israel time, highlighting the lighter side and advancing a positive view of Israel here on Israel News Talk Radio.
All right, we are back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com, and we are observing the holiday of Tisha B'Av, the ninth of the Hebrew month of Av. This is our Nakba, our national tragedy, where the Jewish people and the world, by the way, lost the Holy Temple. The third temple, by the way, that will be built, please God, it should be soon, will be a place where all of mankind can come together and worship our Creator. It is going to be a wonderful thing, but in the meantime that we don't have it, we are mourning this. This is a national tragedy. It's actually a worldwide tragedy. And here to tell us more about this and on the mystical concepts of it as well, we have joining us Rabbi Avraham Shira. He is a therapist, teacher, and author. His book titles are Eye for an Eye and Universal Hologram, which will be out soon. He's also a teacher of Kabbalah, or Jewish mysticism, and prayer. And you can visit his website at avrahamshira.com. You can also follow him on Facebook, where he gives a lot of videos and live talks there. Welcome to the show, Rabbi Avraham Shira.
Thank you, Tamar. Good morning.
Good morning to you. All right. So I explained to everyone that our national tragedy, our Nakba, which is a real Nakba, by the way, is the loss of our holy temple. Tell our listeners why. I mean, you know, we're alive today. We go to the mall. We go shopping. Even with the corona, we're doing things. What is the big deal that we don't have the temple?
Well, the rabbis teach us that the loss of the temple, if the nations knew what we lost and what they lost, they would mourn even greater than we do. The temple is not just a building. It is a place of atonement. It is a place where we turn to God, where we are accepted and received in an intimate relationship with the Creator, and we heal our wounds and we pick ourselves up and we return and we become renewed and better people. When we lost the building, we lost that intimate connection that we had really experienced since the redemption from Egypt, when the divine presence was constantly near us in all different types of ways. And, you know, being near Hashem, it sounds like the most wonderful thing in the world, but there are difficulties involved. It's like living in the palace of the king. It's a wonderful place to live in the palace, but you're always looking and afraid to touch anything because, you know, the palace of the king, you don't want to break a cup or
a vase.
Bump into something.
Right.
So we call that in Kabbalah the aspect of judgment or din, that where you live under this sense of awe and fear of making mistakes. And people don't like to live under that sense, that feeling of I'm afraid of making mistakes. But we have to have a necessary bit of that in order to maintain a proper perspective and proportion in our relationship with God. We have to love God, of course. We're commanded to love God. We say it every day. We also have to remember that He's God and we're human beings. So the temple is a symbol of that atonement, of that ability of humanity to draw close to God through various procedures and ceremonies that we do in the temple.
Okay, but, you know, people alive today, we don't even understand what a tragedy was because we never experienced the temple. And for those of us who never experienced having the temple and the opportunities that it gave us to become closer to God, we're thinking, oh, we have a good life. You know, I go on vacation every year. I mean, you know, minus the corona. And I mean, you know, I have a swimming pool in my backyard and, you know, I go shopping and I like to go climbing mountains and skiing. What's wrong?
Well, since we haven't experienced the destruction of the temple, it's true. We lack that sense of loss. And that's why the rabbis instituted the loss. There are many customs surrounding Tisha B'Av that we keep in order to remember that we have a loss. Because, you know, out of sight, out of mind. Anybody who's lost a dear relative knows that sense of loss that occurs in the beginning. But for the Jewish people, it is not enough just to remember the past. We have to feel that we are lacking something, that something is missing. And that we do even at the moments of the highest joy, like when a couple is married, we break the cup under the chuppah because we want to remember, we want to feel that something is not right, something is still absent from our relationship to the Creator. So, you know, but in our generation, you know, we have, unfortunately, the Holocaust. And the Holocaust is really a form of a destruction of the Jewish people. Obviously, 6 million did not die in vain. But, and even though most of us, of course, weren't alive then, that was a huge international destruction to the Jewish people, not unlike the destruction that took place at the hands of the Romans throughout their occupation of Eretz Israel.
the land of Israel.
We didn't lose a building, but more importantly than Aitz and Evan, you know, wood and stone, we lost, you know, a great, great portion of an amazing population of people that, well, we know that they went to heaven and they're in a much better place now. But, you know, we have to remember the loss. And to feel that, we have to have an open heart. So it's really the opening of the heart and being willing to face that sense of something is missing.
So we have to realize, number one, that it's preventing us from being as close to our Creator as we can, because we don't have that opportunity. It's like trying to visit with somebody and there's no place to visit them. You know, like even it's right. You know what it is? It's like being on Zoom instead of being in someone's house. Or being with that person, it's like being on Zoom with them. Nothing wrong, nothing bad against Zoom. It helps us, but it's not as good as being there. Maybe we could put it that way. All right, so we don't have this, and maybe you can go with, you know, I was telling somebody several days ago that I wanted to get a really good shower in, washing my hair, scrubbing it really good, et cetera, because the 9 days were going to be the next day. And I didn't want, you know, it's a custom that we don't shower during these times because we're in a state of mourning. Also, when someone dies and we're in our 7 days of mourning, sitting Shiva, we also don't shower. Of course, there are exceptions. You can, if you're going to be getting a rash or something like that, you can clean yourself in certain places, but we don't take these lovely showers during this time. Explain some of the other customs that we go through during this time.
Well, on Tisha B'Av itself, there are five main inuim, they're called, or self-afflictions. Not wearing leather shoes. We don't eat or drink, of course. We don't even greet people as in our normal joyous way of Shalom Aleichem or good morning or anything like that. We don't have relations, intimate relations. We don't also do joyous things or things that bring us joy. Even the learning of Torah, which we are commanded day and night, we don't learn anything that will bring us joy, because Lishrei Lev Simcha, the learning of Torah, does bring joy to the heart. So we only learn things that remind us of the destruction, like Midrash Eicha, which is written by Yirmiyahu, the Lamentations, and certain parts of Yirmiyahu.
Yirmiyahu is Jeremiah in English. Go ahead.
Jeremiah was the prophet who foretold the destruction for 40 years. And he was not a very popular guy in Jerusalem. He was murdered in the end, and but he was very beloved in heaven, obviously. And he also, in his major book of prophecy, spoke at a length about the destruction and what that was like for the Jewish people. So we learned those things on Tisha B'Av. We also learned the tractate Gittin, which deals with the destruction itself in Jerusalem. And then we have Moed Katan, teaches us about the laws of mourning. So all these different places we do learn, but not learning Torah for a Jew is like, you know, if I don't open up a piece of Torah when I get up in the morning, I don't know where I am. I open the book and I'm home. And so that's really the type of relationship. It's a gift to have that relationship, really. Because I feel centered when I open the Torah. And even on Tisha B'Av, we're not supposed to feel centered. We're not supposed to feel okay. We're not supposed to feel it's all right, you know, it's a plague. And, you know, and Rabbi Kitov explains amazingly that the reason that Jews stay in exile is because they don't feel the loss. That they don't allow themselves to remember Jerusalem and feel the loss. And so that actually causes the Jews to stay in the places of exile where they think everything is fine. And it's not fine. Hmm. And nowadays, especially with anti-Semitism worldwide on the rise and continuing, and how could we feel at home? We're not supposed to feel at home. We're supposed to miss Jerusalem. We're supposed to miss the Holy Land. And if we don't, you know, that's such an essential part of being a Jew is being in the land and building this land, because it is the way that God communicates to the rest of the world. That's our job.
This is an important topic that we're talking about. In we learn in the Bible that in the end of days everyone's going to converge on Jerusalem. Why is this place so controversial in the sense of who it belongs to? Everybody wants to make claim to it. So we're going to talk about that when we get back, everybody. Feel free to call in. We'll be right back.
Hi, everyone. This is Andrea Simintow from Jerusalem, inviting you to drop everything and join me on my show, Pull Up a Chair. We'll visit this week's quirky stories, meet fabulous guests, and discover my Israel. Together, we'll laugh, shout, and explain the topics that make us say, hey, we've got to talk about that. So get comfortable and pull up a chair with me, Andrea Simintow, every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On the Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
All right, we're back here at the Tamar Yona Show on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com, and we're talking about Israel's Nakba, or our present national tragedy, which is the loss of our Holy Temple. We still do not have it. They say that every year that we observe this holiday, because we don't have the temple, it's as if we are destroying it again each year, because it means that we have not done the tikkun, the fixing of what needs to be done in order to be able to merit this. And, you know, when you think about it, I know I get a pain in my heart when I think about I am living in a house here in Israel, and yet God does not have a house here in Israel. It's still destroyed, and I feel terrible about that. Our guest is Rabbi Avraham Shira. He is a therapist, teacher, and author. He's also a teacher of Kabbalah and prayer. You can visit his website at avrahamshira.com. In the last segment, we were just about to touch on the significance of Jerusalem, where the Holy Temple stood. I mean, even the Muslims who claim Jerusalem to be such a holy city for them, they put their behinds to the Temple Mount and they face Mecca in Saudi Arabia. So Jerusalem obviously is not that important to them. For Christianity, Rome is their capital, not Jerusalem, even though they like to claim Jerusalem as theirs as well. Why is everyone trying to claim Jerusalem, which belongs to the Jewish people? Why is there such controversy? Why does the world keep fighting over this holy place, Rabbi?
That's a very, very important question, Tamar. We know from the Bible that Adam and Eve fell from their state of grace. The Kabbalah teaches that it was a spiritual realm that they inhabited before they ate from what's called the tree of knowledge of good and evil, which is really the duality of consciousness that overtakes the mind, where we no longer see things as one. We see things as a dual universe, as pieces. We don't see the wholeness and the oneness. So that is the fall. And when that fall happened, Adam realized what had happened and what they had lost when they were removed from this virtual garden, if you will. And he brought a sacrifice to a mountain. The first sacrifice brought in history was brought by the first man, Adam, because of this fall from the unified consciousness. And he brought that sacrifice on Har Habayit, on Har Moriah, on the mount where the great dome exists today, and where the temples used to exist. So that place is a holy place to the Jewish people, but it's holy to all of humanity, because there were no Jews or Muslims or Christians when Adam walked this earth. And so the Temple Mount is a place for all humanity to face and to understand that this is the place where atonement began, where tshuva, repentance, and return began. And so it's natural that we would all be attached to the place because we're drawn from there. And on a deeper level, the Kabbalah teaches an amazing idea. It's called the rock of the Dome of the Rock, that rock that's under there, which I have not merited to see, except in pictures, of course. That rock, the rabbis say, is Hushtat Olamimena, that the world was founded from that rock. Now, what does that mean? We live on a planet that's spinning at 6,000 miles a second or hour around, and it's a massive place, and we live in a massive universe. But what it really is teaching us that rock, and that was the place that spirituality became physical. It's when Adam and Eve fell from the garden, the world became a physical place and not a spiritual place. That rock is the place where physicality began, where materialism overtook the spiritual. And it's like a ultimate portal between the physical and the spiritual. And that's why we say all the prayers go up from Har Abayit, because prayer is a physical thing that becomes spiritual. So we're trying to turn the energy of the physical back to the spiritual. And that rock over there, Abraham Avinu brought his son Yitzhak as an altar there. Jacob had the dream of the ladder on that rock. And many, many great things have happened around the Evan HaShetiyah, as we call it. Now, we're also told that the Aron HaKodesh, the Holy Ark, that was made famous in a couple of movies, the Holy Ark was also on that rock. So we don't take these places as simply of significance from a historical perspective. It is a spiritual significance that it is more important to us. And, Rabbi Nachman talks about it in his books, especially in Likutei Moharan, in the 70th Torah. He talks about the Mishkan, which is the mini mikdash. It's the portable mikdash as the place of koach hamoshech. And in Hebrew, koach hamoshech literally means the power to draw. And I translate that as gravity, spiritual gravity. Or you might even call it psychic gravity. It's where people are naturally pulled there. And because just like any vacuum pulls something into it, so too it's a spiritual vacuum. It's where the physical is drawn back to the spiritual. And so we're all drawn there, Jews, Muslims, Christians, all kinds of people that don't even come from the major religions. When they come to the Kotel, they come to the plaza there, they are pulled in by the place because that is the place of the Mishkan. The Mishkan draws the people in. The place where the divine presence dwells is the place people want to go. The Holy Zohar says that any place that's holy, you'll see birds circling above it. Now go to the Kotel on Friday night and look up and tell me what you see. You'll see birds circling. And the same is true in Har Meron, on Lag BaOmer, and other holy places at holy times. The birds are circling because that's a symbol also of the presence of something much greater. So I think when we understand that, we understand the international significance of this place. And it is God's place. And God chose us to dwell here because we were the founding religion. And the other nations, I think, can respect that because they have their holy places as well.
So a person who's detached because they've never known what it's like to have the Holy Temple, so they're not missing it, but they want to feel, they don't want the motions that you go through on Tisha B'Av just to be another, oh, I have to fast again on, this coming Thursday and can't wear, can't go washing my clothes and putting on, freshly laundered garments, and I have to do all of this stuff to mourn, and they're just not feeling it. How does someone get that, the proper headset and heart set in order to really make this meaningful to them that, God willing, we won't have to do this anymore?
That's a very important question. I personally will think of my own losses. About almost 4 years ago, my mother left us, and I still feel that loss. I still look at the phone and think I could just pick up the phone and call my mother, and I can't, at least not that way. Well, that's personal, but it does help open the heart to recognize that we're missing something. I also will put on Holocaust movies, to be honest with you, and not the fun, exciting ones. You know, I don't think there's too many of those. But you know, if you see and you comprehend what happened in the Holocaust, see what happened when the Romans came into Jerusalem and destroyed the holy city. What does it matter if it's a tenement in Warsaw or if it's a stone building in Jerusalem? You know, this is us. Time, the soul is above time, first of all. So to travel backwards and forward in time is natural for the soul. And so to see the destruction in Jerusalem or to see the destruction in Warsaw and other places like that, I don't think it's so hard if we just actually close our eyes and try to be there. And part of the work is to really go inside, to actually allow ourselves to contemplate it and to feel it. Now, anybody who's lost someone that they love can do that. They just have to go back to the moment that the body was buried. That is a traumatic moment, a moment of separation. And I feel like, it's not about the building, but it's about those Jews. You know, the Talmud says that the blood ran in Jerusalem up to their ankles. That's a lot of blood, you know. And for people who have only experienced terrible traumas like that, well, you know, people watch traumas every day on the movies. So why can't it be real? Why does it have to be Hollywood? Why do I have to turn to external sources? Well, the external source is only to arouse our pity and to open the heart. But here we have the real thing. We don't have Hollywood. We have the Jewish people and our path of suffering throughout the exile. There have been so many destructions. The First and the Second World War began on Tisha B'Av. The expulsion from Spain. Began on Tisha B'Av. This date, this synchronicity of time and place is not for nothing. So, God is revealing himself to us through the very synchronicity of the day of Tisha B'Av. We have to connect to that, and we have to understand that is part of our identity and part of our job to fix that. And the rabbis teach that, Kol mi shelo nivna beit hamikdash b'yamav ke'ilu necherav.
All right, when we get back, we're going to be talking about the prophecies that are supposed to happen at the end of days. We'll be right back.
Leap of Faith with Penina Taylor.
We live in the age of information, but not inspiration. If you're like me, you're looking to be inspired, to reach higher, to connect more, and to grow. Well, if you want to get warm, you need to stand close to the fire. And if you want to catch fire, you need to stand close enough to get hit by the sparks. Join me, Penina Taylor, as we walk with people who have embarked on a spiritual journey towards Torah. We'll uncover what started them on their journey and what truths they discovered along the way. So prepare to be inspired as we take a leap of faith every Sunday at 5 p.m. on Israel News Talk Radio.
All right, so we're speaking about Jerusalem and the Holy Temple and the Tisha B'Av holiday that we don't have our temple. But in the end of days, it's said that we are going to have the third temple. It's going to be a place where all nations will come to worship, not just for the Jewish people, but all nations will be able to get close to their Creator. And certain things are prophesied that are going to happen before this. And one of them, of course, is the coming of the Messiah. But here to tell us more about that, we have as our guest again, Rabbi Avraham Shira from avrahamshira.com. And we will post that link on our page where this show is podcasted. And again, if you have any questions, feel free to call in, but do so now before we run out of time. All right. Where would you like to start, Rabbi?
Well, I think the place to start is the prophet Zechariah. In the 14th chapter, he tells us...
is Zechariah. If you can just translate for people who don't know Hebrew. Go ahead.
That's right. Zechariah. It just sounds a little like my old...
It sounds strange, I know. I know, for us, it sounds very strange. Go ahead.
Right, so in that book of the Bible, which is one of the last prophecies that were recorded for posterity, which means that they're going to happen, it says that the Har HaZeitim, the Mount of Olives, will split open, wide, and part will go north and part will go south, and a fountain of waters will emerge that will go all the way to the Dead Sea and all the way to the Mediterranean. Now, that is a big earthquake we're talking about, for a mountain to split. Well, what we found is, amazingly, that the modern geologists have found that there is a continental plate that goes right, a split in the continental plate goes right through Har HaZeitim. And it goes perpendicular to the Dead Sea, straight to the Dead Sea.
Okay, I'm just going to interrupt again. Har HaZeitim is the Mount of Olives. Go ahead.
That's right. The Mount of Olives sits on a continental divide between the two plates that are underneath the earth. Of course, everybody knows that the earth is made of giant masses of rock that have cracks in them. And there's a huge one that goes all the way from Africa to northern Syria, and it goes straight through the Dead Sea. So it's not any wonder that the Dead Sea is the lowest place on Earth, because there it happens to be a tremendous rift between the two continents going north and south. Well, perpendicular to that, there is a rift that goes straight from the Dead Sea to Jerusalem and straight to the Mount of Olives. Now, the Mount of Olives, of course, is just facing the Mount of Moriah, the Temple Mount. So that they're perfectly in line. So when the Torah tells us that that mountain is going to split and there's going to be water going everywhere, I'm like, tell your Arab friends to get homeowners insurance, because that earthquake is not going to be a little one, and it's not a joke. But why it's important, of course, is because if there's such a natural event takes place, it's going to change the topography of the entire region, including Har HaBayit. And including the Mount of, Mount Moriah, where this amazing rock, the Even Hashtiyah, exists. So when I read this prophecy and I understood the geological significance, then it suddenly clicked to me, well, this is going to be one of the major events in the whole messianic process. Because it is not fitting that any nation destroys another nation's religious location. And I don't feel that, even though the Jewish people, we feel that the Mount of the Temple Mount is the Jewish location of our temple. Right now, there's a couple of mosques over there, and it's really not fitting, I don't believe, for one nation to destroy another nation's place of worship. The whole point of worship is to bring people together. The whole point of serving God is that we should exist in peace and understanding and wisdom and maturity, and not in, internecine warfare. So the way it looks to me is geologically that there's going to be an event that's going to change the entire region of East Jerusalem. And when that happens, it's going to reshuffle the deck, if you will, between all the major religions and all the nations of the world that are involved in the issues that surround the Har HaBayit. So when we talk about the Third Temple, of course, there has to be a place for the third temple to happen. And the book Mishkanei Elyon of Rabbi Moshe Chaim Lusato, who's called the Ramchal in Hebrew, by his first an acronym of his name. He writes in his book the Mishkanei Elyon, which literally means the upper temple. The third temple has an upper temple. It has a spiritual form. You know, just like any good architect, before he builds a building, he draws the building. And so too God, who's the greatest architect, has a drawing for the third temple. And that drawing was given over to Yehezkel, Ezekiel the prophet. And we see all the dimensions and shapes and structures of the building of the third temple. So the Ramchal writes about this third temple and how it's going to come, and it is a spiritual and physical process. And if anybody tells you the building is going to fly out of the sky, I would just listen politely and keep praying for everybody. But the way the Rav, and who's a great tzaddik and a master of divine inspiration, says that the upper temple is built, and it's the lower temple has to happen down here. So that this event, which, of course, the Jewish people are waiting for, the non-Jews might think of it as a terrible, another Nakba. But it's not going to be a Nakba for them. It's going to be a chance to come close to God in a real way. And any good, and I know Muslims, and I've worked with Muslims, and I've do business with Muslims, and there are great, there are good Muslims out there. And I don't believe that they hold by the murderous parts of their religion. And like the Hamas and the Hezbollah and the Fatah and the Jihad Muslimi, these people are a small percentage of the people that terrorize the good Muslims. Because I know those good Muslims, and they don't like being terrorized any more than we do. But they're afraid. And it's happening in America today. In other types of political movements, a small percentage always terrorizes the majority into silence. That's what happened in Germany. It's happening in America right now. And it happened in Jerusalem as well, and it happened in ancient days over and over and over. And so it is our job as the majority to not be silent. And this goes with the Jewish people as well. When they built the golden calf, if we hadn't been silent, we'd say, what? You're going to build a golden calf just because Moses went up to head? You know, we would knock those people out in 1 second, but we didn't. And that brought the sin of the golden calf. So we are mutually responsible, everyone.
In the last
destruction, yeah.
In the last 2 minutes that we have, can you give us a very brief summary of what we can expect in the future? What happens first? The Messiah, the splitting of the rock, the earthquakes, the war of Gog and Magog. Just very briefly, we only have another minute and a half.
Well, I'm going to try to put this together very, very briefly. But the basic idea is that the nations are going to come together against Jerusalem. They've been doing that. They've been organizing that for decades already. And actually, the Christians and the Muslims have been fighting over Jerusalem for hundreds and hundreds of years. But now, eventually, the prophets say that the Christians and the Muslims will join together against Jerusalem, which we see very clearly in the union of alliances formed between the Russian nation and its friends and its allies like Iran. And so all these people are coming together, and they're going to come together against Jerusalem, and God's going to take them down. Because that's what he does to these people. He could take them down by cyber warfare. He could take them down by the Torah says that there'll be asteroids. Avnei al-Gabish is called in Hebrew. So whether it's that way or this way, then our enemies will always be destroyed because God does not lose the war. God wins this war. And after our enemies are silenced, then we're going to begin the new process of rebuilding East Jerusalem, and I think the earthquake and the opening of the lower waters beneath Jerusalem is going to be part of that process. Whether the Messiah comes on the same time or before or after, you know, that I cannot tell you, but there are different opinions, and whether he comes earlier or late, you know, that it's really not all our business. But the idea of the politics of the region are pushing all towards this same event, that eventually they're going to push too hard on Jerusalem, and they're going to cause destruction. Because that's what's been happening all over the world. If you notice, all the big tragedies that have happened to America have happened right after they forced us into peace agreements with our enemies. Now, nowhere else in the world are people forced into peace agreements with their enemies except Israel. And that's unjust. And that's tyranny. And you'll see that all the big events, the hurricanes, the earthquakes that happened in the States, happened after they forced us into peace agreements, like Oslo, like Camp David. And this still goes on today. And this talk about a two-state solution, the Arabs don't want a two-state solution. They want a one-state solution. They understand who the best governors are here. And this is the talk in the streets of Bethlehem and Hebron. Everywhere, the Arabs know the truth. It's that small percentage that causes the trouble, and somebody's feeding them money.
Wow. All right. So, well, we're going to have to leave it there. We've come to the end of the show. I want to thank you so much for coming on. Very interesting stuff, and I want to find out more about the asteroids. All right. We'll have to save that for another show. What?
That's also in the books of the prophecies, the Avnei
okay.
El-Gabish. So, you know.
All right. Ready. Another time. Thank you, Rabbi Avraham Shira, and you can visit his website at avrahamshira.com. Thanks for being with us, everyone.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising@israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar. I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom! Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling for the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.